Phil, that was really sobering. Thank you for sharing all of that data with us. It does feel, though, a little bit like a nuclear option. Franz Grenier was talking a bit earlier about communities establishing their own independence, their own centers of excellence, like we see around us here in Hermanus. There's quite a lot of support for the idea of a government of national unity. And as we've heard from the politicians, that means you go into the room, you've got your cards, and then you have your not negotiables, and away you go. And one of the not negotiables we know from the DA is devolution of power, and they've been at it for a long time. Why do we need the nuclear option when, and I hope it doesn't sound like, you know, we've never tried socialism because it never worked, but when the other options are now starting to come on the table because of this big change in the South African politic?
Well, I think, first of all, look, the different parts to that question. First of all, I don't think other options are coming onto the table. I think, yeah, actually, ironically, I was here yesterday for John Steenhuisen's speech, and up until it came to the solutions, I couldn't disagree with a word of anything he said. He painted out this scenario where he kind of said, look, you know what, vote in 2024 like your lives depend on it, because the alternative is you're going to end up with this, what do they call it, doomsday coalition. So one of the things that we have to be careful of is that we don't delude ourselves. You know, and frankly, one of the issues that we have as let's use the word termly as liberals, is we're just too damn nice. You know, and we're in this situation where we kind of think everybody thinks like we do. Everybody else is going to be decent. We'll find that's not the case. That's not how South Africa is unfolding. So I'm not, and we've never been. Yeah, I don't think anybody should fix themselves into one solution. A strategist said to me once, the future is plural. There's more than one future, and I agree with that. But you know what we miss? What the Western Cape hasn't got, and what it won't have there, and where the starting point is agency. We have to have the ability to make our own decisions. So if the future of the Western Cape is in part of some sort of conglomeration of South Africa, so be it. That's for the Western Cape people to decide. But we must be the people who make that decision. We are trapped in a situation, bear in mind, where for 30 years, the majority of the Western Cape people have never been governed according to their democratic will. And if we can't extract a mechanism where we can make decisions for ourselves, then anything that comes downstream of that is inherently lost. We can't fix policing. We can't fix the economy. We can't fix rail. We can't fix anything if we don't start off with the authority to do that. And I think the very first thing we have to do is say, right, fine, we must take control of our own destiny. And then if we want to negotiate some solution with the rest of South Africa, fantastic. But we negotiate on terms that we choose, and we decide whether it works for us or not. And we've got this window of opportunity, and it's opening up. And I get the government of national unity save Zimbabwe as an example. So I think we've got to be really, really careful. And what I heard, funny enough, from John when it came to solutions, to a certain example I heard from Franz now, if we use a gambling analogy, what I'm hearing is, come on, look, all is not lost. Let's go to the roulette wheel and we throw everything on, 18 red. And I think for Cape Independence, we say, no. Let's walk away from the table. This game is rigged. Let's get control of our own destiny, and then we can start the discussions.
When you heard Gayton McKenzie very aggressively say that he does not want to participate, and given that he has a constituency that is sizable and expanding, what do you then say to him? How do you talk to him, given that, if you think about it, he's now the premier candidate for the PA and potentially an independent Cape, given the demographics, the first resident of the Western Cape?
Well, look, as much as Gator would love every decision to be his, that isn't his decision, is it? I mean, ultimately, democracy is about what the people of the Western Cape want, not what Gayton wants. And with the greatest respect to Gayton, it's not like he's polling at 30% of the thing. So let's Gayton get the votes in the bag first, and then we can hear what his plans are. But the reality is, let's ask the Western Cape people what they want. And fundamentally, let's go to a referendum. Let's remember that what we're fighting for at this point is not a one-tick job on Cape Independence. We are fighting for the Western Cape government to consult with the Western Cape people and to give them, in accordance with the Constitution, the right to say what it is that they want. So let's hear what the people want. And I think when you're in a situation where you're scared of democracy, you're scared to ask the people what they want, you're on dodgy ground.
You sound a bit like Kate Gaten in a way, in that you're talking from the heart, sure. And it's a very passionate plea, which is pretty different to the way that the DA is operating. And I loved the question earlier today about the hearts and the heads, yesterday rather, the hearts and the heads. Are you winning the hearts though?
Well, I think it's early days. And look, the real tragedy is when will be the perfect moment to sell Cape Independence? 3 weeks after the election. You know, actually, it's absolute nightmare standing before the election and trying to tell people, hey, disaster's coming, whilst the established parties are all trying to convince everybody that, hey, the multi-party charter is going to save us. Well, it's not. But the reality is, 3 weeks after the election, we're 5 years away from our next opportunity to fix this. So we have to fix it now. And I agree with John. What did John say? Don't take for granted that there's going to be a free and fair election in 2029. 2024 may be our last chance. So do we really want to gamble on what's going to happen? Let's wait and see, and maybe we'll have a miracle. The multi-party charter is polling at 33%. It was polling at 33% in 2021. Do we really think that in the next 80 days, it's suddenly going to pick up 17 points and become a government? It's not. It's not. And we have to face our reality. One of the difficulties, it's uncomfortable, and I know. I stand up and I say things that are really uncomfortable for people to hear, and I get it. You know, but many people know I came to South Africa. It's my adopted country. I've been here for 20 years. Definitely didn't come here to try and break South Africa up. But I've got a young family, you know, and I want a future for them. And I don't want that future to be in the UK. I want it to be here. And actually, they're Afrikaners. They've been here for 400 years. I want them to be here for another 400 years. And we've got to fight for it now, because if we don't fight for it now, there is going to be nothing left to fight for. You know, and how many, what do they talk about, the Zimbabweans? Wenwis. When we were there, let's not become Wenwis. Let's take action now while we still can. We've got the right in the Constitution for a referendum. Alan Windey is refusing to call it, but he can. And in 80 days, we elect the person who decides whether he's going to call a referendum or not. Send Alan Windey a message at the ballot box that we want a referendum on Cape Independence. And actually, don't worry about taking the DA out of power. We will make sure the DA stay in power, but we need to send that message. If you want Cape Independence, you have to get Alan Windey to call a referendum. Alan Windey says, I'm South African first. We say, well, if you really want to be South African first, then resign as the Premier of the Western Cape, go to the National Parliament, which is the parliament that's supposed to serve South Africa, and let's elect somebody else in the Western Cape who's going to put the Western Cape people first, because actually that's the job of the Western Cape Premier.
And if a miracle were to happen, in your opinion, and the multi-party coalition were to do what has happened, we've seen it all over the world, where the pollsters have been just so wrong, and they do get that 50% plus one, and they do come to power, would you then abandon your intention, your ambitions?
I don't know. To be honest, we'll have to deal with that reality when it comes. I think it's so far. First of all, I think it's so far out of the realms of possibility that it's not even worth considering, because that's not what's going to happen. And we've also got to look at, I think there's an issue that comes downstream. Why are we in a situation where we're wondering how can we form a government? We're in that situation because South Africa is just so big and just so diverse that trying to find something we all agree on is virtually impossible. So now we've got these parties who don't have an awful lot in common in certain places, who are coming together to try and cobble together a coalition. And fair play to them. Again, like I said, we'll support them. The referendum party, we're not trying to do. But the reality is, how long is that going to last? If those parties miraculously end up with 51% of the vote, how long will they actually continue to agree? Because they don't fundamentally want the same things. They have different views. Well, what they can agree on is that they desperately want to remove the ANC, and I agree with them totally on that. But long term, it comes down to who are we? Yeah, the Western Cape people are a constitutional body, and we voted differently from the rest of South Africa for 30 years, and we have a right under international law, which South Africa has affirmed three times since 1994, to self-determination. Why would we not choose to make our decisions for ourselves, as opposed to giving those decisions across to a South African government that has been terrible, and perhaps we may end up in a better one? So, look, we'll have to deal with it afterwards, but I don't think that's the solution.
Okay, so we now have a political dispensation which is finally coming in, which was produced in 1994 to have coalition governments. We heard that from France, and it clearly is the case. So now we have a coalition government coming in, and it's going to be messy and it's going to be difficult, and exactly the point that you're making. Would the CAPE that you envisage post-independence, your dream scenario, would that also be coalition governance?
Well, I think there's an awful lot. So I think we've got to have to understand that, and we can look at Brexit as perhaps not the perfect example, but an example of how this process unfolds. So we need to understand that we start off with wanting to claim the right to make decisions for ourselves. And then I think there's a lot of discussions and talking to go on afterwards. A lot of people are who in the Cape independence movement favour, for example, a canton system. Now, maybe the Western Cape people think that's a great idea. It was on the table pre-94. Many people will say, well, if we'd had a canton system, we might not have ended up in this mess that we've got now. Maybe that's the solution. Maybe we stick with PR. I think there's a discussion that has to be had around that. But we've got to remember that when we're advocating for Cape independence, we're not presuming upon ourselves to take the right to make decisions for the Western Cape people. That's not our job. We're trying to hand power to the Western Cape people. And ultimately, we need to establish a process where we work out what is going to be best. We just know that the current system doesn't work great. But I also recognise that if we'd had a first-past-the-post system, I think as Franz alluded to, we'd be in a far bigger mess than we are now too. So you know, PR has served us well to a certain extent.
Your argument reaches into the hearts, but it has not translated at the ballot box. Why is that?
Well, I think so. We have to be, and I think that's a fair comment, and I think there are a number of different answers to that. But first and foremost, we have to understand the process for independence referendums. We kind of make this independence referendum some magical thing. In the last 50 years, there's been 81 independence referendums around the world. Once every 7 months, on average, somebody's having an independence referendum. That is part of the process. And why is a referendum in the South African constitution when we've got elections? Well, it's in the constitution because there's a fundamental difference between a referendum, which is a single issue, one question, which transcends party barriers, compared to elections, which where people vote across a range of issues and along party political lines. So I get it. So people in the Western Cape have been put in a very difficult situation by the DA. We know from polling that the majority of DA voters support Cape independence. But when the DA say we're not going to call a referendum, they're forcing people to choose between voting for what perhaps is an abstract concept that people maybe believe can't come true, can it really happen, against the reality of their daily lives. And you know, at the end of the day, I don't want the ANC to come back in. So it's very, very difficult to transfer support for Cape independence into a party. And you know, the party that we've had, I mean, look, it has increased in the last election. I think parties that had Cape independence in the manifesto had 5.3% of the vote, which was significantly up from, I think, 1% of the previous election. And obviously, there are some issues in terms of how professional those parties were. And that's the reason we formed the referendum party. I can't say we'll get it right. But I mean, it's important that if we've got a provincial government that's determined to not listen to its own people, that we create some form of political pressure. We voted the referendum party. Let's sort of have the post-mortem on our success or failure after we've stood in this election. But I hope that we are going to see a significant amount of support. And we're clearly not going to get 50%, and we don't need to. We need to get about 100,000 votes by our calculations to deliver a referendum on Cape independence, and that's what we're targeting as a party.
So you're on the ballot box? Well, on the ballot poll.
We're on. So yeah, look. Our issues with the IEC are relatively well publicised, so we
but explain, because not everybody knows okay. Those issues.
All right, so let's go for the short version because it's a very long story. There's a new section in the Electoral Act which requires new parties or unrepresented parties to collect a certain number of signatures to demonstrate that there's enough support to warrant you being on the ballot box. And in the Western Cape, if you want to be on the Western Cape provincial ballot, you need 7,176 signatures. And if you want to be on the national ballot in the Western Cape, from the Western Cape, you need 13,201. Now, we got 18,660. So we've got more than enough signatures, but unbeknown to them, and it's really not a great situation for democracy. The law says signatures without giving any definition for signatures. There's no definition in the regulations. So we wrote to the IEC and we said, can we collect these signatures? digitally or electronically, or must we collect them physically? The IEC told us in writing we collect them electronically. We collected them electronically, and then 9 days before the deadline, they announced that no, you must collect them physically. And we're now involved in a court case. And we've ended up with our signatures across three types of system. We've got a few that are collected physically, and for those who want to say CAFE independence is an independent movement, most of our physical signatures came from Kailisha. That's where we got most of our written support. Then we have a tick box method where people went in and they put in their details, ID number, contact details, click submit the signature specifically for the IEC. That's the one the IEC are adamant they're not going to take. And after we had a problem, our lawyers advised us to try and convert as many of those as possible into physical signatures, but not wet ink, so you could go onto your phone and sign with your finger. We managed to convert 11,000 in 36 hours, which should give us enough. So I think we're confident of being on the provincial ballot. We may end up in a court case to get onto the. We've retained the legal team, but let's see where we get to.
So what's your next plan after the election? Let's say the referendum party doesn't get onto the ballot, doesn't get the 100,000 votes that you are expecting and or hoping for in the Western Cape. What happens next?
Well, look, I mean, like everything, you know, we're planning for success and not failure. So our plans around what are we going to do when we get the 100,000 votes? Well, not what are we going to do? Yes, there are options. Ultimately, we want democracy. So at some point in time, it may be that the people of the Western Cape don't want Cape independence. That's fine by us. You know, hold the referendum, ask them, and abide by the outcome. But what's probably on our agenda is holding a private referendum. If we end up in a situation where the Premier of the Western Cape is going to deliberately obstruct the democracy in his province, then we'll probably hold a private referendum.
Again, you seem to agree with Gayton that the DA is the problem. You know, we have in the Western Cape almost a cult-like support for the DA, that the DA is right because they've done a hell of a lot better than the rest of the country. And if you live somewhere else and came to live here, you would have that living experience. And yet, it seems almost like the Dutch disease, that you're doing so damn well down here. Well, let's find something to get to complain about.
Yeah, and I don't think that's the case. So I would traditionally be a DA voter. I like the DA. Probably policy-wise, they're the party that for me would be closest to my personal policies. And I think they've done a good job. I think what we've got to remember is there are two issues around the DA. First of all, they've become the status quo. You know, so we're in a democracy where you've had one party has had power for 15 years in one place, and actually it's not very motivated to shake things up because actually it's the dominant power. So we have an issue there. And the structure of South African politics means that the politicians are compliant to their party because there is their answer to that. So what do you find in the DA is you find a whole load of well-meaning people who frankly have no courage to stand against the system. So it's very difficult to instigate. If I was back in the UK with a constituency system, you know, you would go to constituencies and you would turn MP after MP after MP based on what the people want, because the MP is responsible to the person. So I don't think the DA are bad. I've got no axe to grind with the DA. I think they've done a great job, and I'm eternally grateful for them in the Western Cape. Nobody will get it out of my mouth that the DA are a bad party. I've got huge respect for Helen. I've got huge respect for John. That's not my issue. How do I describe it? If I'm probably being blunt, is what's the role of parties like us and the organisation, the Cape Independence Advocacy Group? We're the guys with a cattle prod that are going behind the DA, saying you've got to go a bit further, you've got a bit faster, you've got to go that way because that's where you have to go. And that's our role to play. So our frustration is not with the DA's role in government. I think they're a good job in government. It's that actually they've become really conservative, and they've got an opportunity here. Look, the DA is a federal party, and the federal system in the DA is broken. So what should happen is John and Helen, as the people who are looking after the national interest, should be saying, well, what do we want to do as a national party because we're representing the whole country? And Alan, as the person who's reading the Western Cape in the Western Cape, the DA should be saying, well, hold on a second, but that's not in the best interests of the Western Cape. But of course, Alan is the least willing to talk about Cape independence. You can have a sensible conversation with John and Helen about it. Alan is just belligerent. And so therefore, you know, I have far more of an issue with Allen than the DA. My issue is not with the DA's government. But I mean, if you have a party that is refusing to ask the people who voted for it what they want, there is an issue. You know, they make the joke, the undemocratic alliance. And that's probably unfair. But on this issue, the DA are being undemocratic. And you have to say, why are they scared of calling a referendum on Cape Breton? It would help everything. It would help their fight for devolution. It would help their fight for federalism. What's the downside? And the downside is the DA know, and I'm certain they polled it, I speculation, they know that if they hold a referendum, the Western Cape is going to vote to leave. They don't want to hold the referendum because they don't want to know what the people think.
There's a, right, let's get the microphones to the floor. There's a question here. If you have a question, put your hand up, please, and the mic will come to you.
Sorry, I just got one quick question. Do you think the international powers that be, political and economic, will allow it?
Thank you. Absolutely. I think the stars are completely aligned for that. I think, you know, the other day, obviously, secession under international law is a hugely contested issue. But I mean, if we look at what's happened in the world in the last 2 or 3 years, you know, frankly, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. So I take no joy in what happened because of the suffering of people. But I mean, we've seen the national government holding military exercises with Russia and China, while the Western Cape government is painting the town hall in the Ukrainian flag and banning Russian diplomats from the thing. We've seen the Suez Canal and shipping being blocked out through the Gulf, which increases the strategic significance of the Cape sea routes. So, I mean, at this point in time, yeah, we've seen the Israeli crisis. In every situation, we're ending up in a world, what can I call it, a series of events that make Cape independence even more significant on a global scale. And I have to tell you, when I first engaged, we can't engage with other countries. It's illegal. A country can't interfere in other countries' internal affairs. You have to get your independence first, and then you get recognition. But you can engage with political parties, and we do on a regular basis. And the first time I walked in a room and had to explain to people about Cape independence, I thought it was going to be a hard sell. And how do I explain the intricacies and the nuances of South African politics? Before I got past my third sentence, they were kind of like, hey, we're there. So one thing I can absolutely promise you is if the Western Cape people vote to secede, getting international support is the least of our worries. They'll queue up.
Phil, you've been in this country 23 years. You're a UK citizen. You are driving a very divisive agenda. And I want to know why do you think you have the right to do that? Because it's offensive for me as a South African to hear that.
Do I have any less rights than anybody else? Do we believe what the South African constitution says, that South Africa belongs to everybody who lives in it? Or are we going to pick and choose when that suits us? And just remember, I'm here. I've got a family. But they go back as long as yours do. My children are no less important than anybody else. And what am I doing? Am I asking for the right to make a decision for Cape independence? No, I'm not. I'm asking for you to have the right to make the decision on Cape independence. And if you're opposed to it, great. But then vote against it. That's what democracy is about. Let the West get. So if I was making the decision, I would agree with you 100%. But I'm not asking for the right to make the decision. I'm asking the right for you to make the decision.
Phil. So say we get the referendum through and say the Cape becomes independent. What happens if the next day the national government cuts the power cables?
Right. So look, I think, first of all, let's just kind of, perhaps if I take a step back, it's a fair question. If we have a referendum on Cape independence, it's really important everybody understands when we wake up the next day, we're not independent. All that's happened is the Western Cape people have said we want independence. So effectively, they've mandated the Western Cape government. And there's a great section, and it's worth reading, in the Supreme Court judgment of Canada on Quebec on exactly this issue, which says, well, look, when you wake up the next day, you know, constitutional rights can't be divorced from constitutional obligations. You're still part of Canada in there. We're still part of South Africa. We're still subject to the South African constitution. But at the same time, it says that, you know, South Africa, or in their case, Canada, can't be indifferent to the clearly expressed will of the Western Cape people that they want to leave. And what must follow is a set of negotiations which takes everybody's interests into account. And on that situation, the Western Cape government should negotiate on behalf of the Western Cape people. The South African government should negotiate on behalf of the South African people. And if we're sensible, any good negotiation, and we're full of obviously business people in the room, we're looking for a win-win, not a win-lose. So we need to negotiate those terms. So therefore, the sort of the likelihood, and we saw it in Brexit, they called it the hard exit. It's very easy on the first day for everybody to stand and dictate terms of how this separation is going to take place. But the reality is everybody needs a solution. South Africa and the Western Cape, if they separate, are still going to have ties. You know, we're still going to have far more than electricity, and it's going to be disastrous for both parties. So, for example, yes, they can cut the grid. At this point in time, the Western Cape is energy self-sufficient, so I'm not sure that helps South Africa. We're sending renewables up country, but there you go. But equally, South Africa is going to want the Western Cape to take its share of the debt. We're going to want to be able to do business together. So the notion of saying, look, you know what, we're just going to have this hard exit and we're going to make some really ridiculous decisions is unlikely because there are going to be reprisals on the other side. And ultimately, a win-win is the way to go. And I think a win-win is deliverable because once the Western Cape votes to leave, long before it's happened, you know, it's absolutely a hand grenade in the room of state. But there are many, many other parts of South Africa that suddenly are going to say, well, it doesn't really serve our purpose to be part of South Africa. And I think that's healthy. And we end up in a situation where we start to re-examine, what being part of South Africa is. Because let's remember, South Africa's history is 114 years of tyranny. Now, it's 114 years old. The British screwed everybody. The Afrikaners screwed everybody, apart from themselves. And now the ANC just screwed everybody. So here we are. You know, what's the history of South Africa? Domination from Pretoria that always was not in the best interest of the majority of the people.
I think something that you're missing here, perhaps, potentially, or maybe you aren't, is the massive oil and gas strike off the Southern Cape coast. That raises the stakes hugely for Pretoria, because that is it's a game changer for South Africa. And the more you listen to people like James Lorimer, who's actually coming with us to the UK to go and tell the UK market about this, even though he's on the MPC or the other side. That, however, is going to make it incredibly difficult for the rest of South Africa to say, okay, Cape, take your oil and gas and off you go, and we'll actually pass on that.
No, and look, I think it comes back to the answer I just gave. We need to have a win-win. And I think the answer, this is about democracy, and it's about the right of being able to make our own decisions. Democracy and self-determination. It's not about money. We will be better off. But if we'd be worse off, I would still rather be in charge of my own destiny and trust that we can create, as a group of people, a better future for ourselves when we're making decisions, rather than the likes of Ramaphosa and Malema. And therefore, if the oil strike becomes the sticking point, then let's negotiate a solution. Let's pay a portion of the revenue. Let's just be sensible and just deliver a win-win.
Where do you draw the line in all of this? And I remember I lived in the Republic of Parkview for a period of time. And there was the Republic of Hout Bay. Well, bumper sticker. That was as far as it went. Where do you draw the line, and why would it be a historic Western Cape boundary that becomes the area that should get independent?
No, look, fair question. And I think, so it's more about the, so I think the starting point and the end point aren't the same thing. So first of all, it's there are certain rules in international law about secession. So this question, Alan Windey actually often says that, well, how about, you know, the Republic of Amanus? Well, the reality is that international law requires two things. The breakaway state and the rump state are both financially viable. So that's your first part in there. See, that stops us getting to a silly level. But the requirements for a country were laid out in the Montevideo Convention 1933, a defined territory, a permanent population, a political authority, and the right to interact with other states. So that's the four requirements of statehood. So it's very, very easy to start with the Western Cape, where we have our own constitution. We're the only province with our own constitution, our own parliament. We've got our own voters' role. The border's very well defined. So it's very, very easy to have this argument at this point in time on the Western Cape. I would love the borders to be final borders to be defined democratically. I'm a Democrat. I would say, well, let's if we vote to leave, let's have the municipalities along the border have secondary referendums and let's define that border because there's a lot of people in the southern half of the Northern Cape and in the most western portion of the Eastern Cape who are, if you look at a voting map of South Africa and you split the yellow and green, the border is very, very clear. People on this side of the border think like this. People on that side of the border think, the majority I'm talking about now, think like that. And you know, people in those areas will say, well, look, you know what, if it's going to be an independent Western Cape, we want to be in it. But let's find a democratic process. It's not about what I want. It's about allowing people to choose their own destiny. Because we are the Titanic. We all know we're the Titanic. You know, why would we not allow people to get off?
Phil, thank you. I'd like you to cast your hypothetical mind forward 90 days. 1st of June, we wake up and the DA multi-party coalition has won 52% of the national vote. Yeah. How would Cape independence be different? And what would happen to your view?
Sure. So I think that's very similar to the question that Alec asked. But look, one, I think that's outside of the realms of realistic possibility. So it's not going to happen. But if it does happen, as an individual, I'm a pragmatist at heart. So at the end of the day, we have to deal with what the realities are. If we find ourselves in a different universe after 2024 and some complete miracle happens, then we have to look and see what happens. What I suggest would happen is when we cast ourselves another 90-day forward, we're going to find ourselves in a very different situation too, because I don't think there's a viable national government for South Africa. I think we're in for a torrid time. I don't think the ANC and the EFF and MK can very easily cohabit. I don't think the MPC charter can very easily cohabit. I don't think the ANC and the DA can work together because we're just too different, you know. But let's see what the reality is, and if our reality change, anybody who doesn't change to reflect the reality is a fool. Of course, you have to take reality into account.
What's the trend been like for Cape independence?
Upward. Unsurprisingly, I think R.W. Johnson said, well, look, the Cape independence guys have got the easiest job in the world. They just sit there and let the ANC promote Cape independence every day in the news is another reason why it should be. But I mean, when we first polled, support was at 36% in the first time we polled. It was at 47% the second time we polled, and it was at 58% the last time we polled. So you've seen this steady growth.
Yeah, and that's across all demographics.
Yeah, well, look, it's not equally across all demographics, but that's across all the, yeah, that is a demographically representative sample of the Western Cape. And what you see, interesting enough, you've seen the movements, and the increase in support for Cape independence has not come from white voters. White voters always had about 70% support for Cape independence, and that's never really changed. The growth has come amongst coloured voters, most specifically, but also amongst black voters. Yeah, and obviously we'll always defend this accusation of being racist. It's fine, we're in South Africa, it's normal. But I mean, you know, on our organisation, we have people of all races on the executive committee. When we put up candidates for the referendum party, we have candidates of all races. Must never think the Cape independence. If you've anybody seen pictures of our marches, you know, this is not a white movement. Yeah, this is a movement that people saw because, frankly, we're all people and we want to find solutions. Now, I think there's a big difference in support. In this last poll, support amongst coloured voters for the first time was higher than amongst white voters.
Just explain that.
Elaborate.
So the support amongst coloured voters when we polled in 2020 was at 39%, if I'm out of percent. It was at 51% in 2021, and it was just shy of 80% in 2023.
Just shy of 80%.
80.
But that would be very contradictory to what Gayton McKenzie was saying this morning, that in fact he is anti-Cape independence and that his party is growing in leaps and bounds.
Well, it comes back to the thing, Gayton has a very interesting take. All the polls are wrong. Everybody else is wrong. This is the data. Let's look at the election results. I think Gayton, from what I've seen, and I don't spend a lot of time dwelling on that, because I think it's almost pointless to start focusing too much on demographic groups. Who do most coloured voters vote for? They vote for the DA. That's why the DA are in power. We must understand that coloured voters are not one magical group. They're a very, very diverse group of people. That Gayton has certainly got some traction in rural communities. But I don't know how much. My suspicion is not that much. But anyway, maybe I'm wrong.
Can I keep going? Okay. Well, let me keep going. Now, if the ANC, EFF, MK alliance is put together, the Kremlin's happy, South Africa's in their hands because they've funded the whole thing as we're being told, will that strengthen or weaken your case?
No, it clearly would strengthen our case, but I wouldn't want it to be happen either way. I mean, you've got this horrible situation where I love South Africa. I want the best for it. You know, the last thing I want is a ANC, the EFF, MK coalition government, because it's going to be an absolute disaster for South Africa. You know, ironically, what the disaster for South Africa is good for Cape independence. Undoubtedly, there'll be a whole lot of people saying, well, gosh, I wished I'd voted. I wished I'd. But I mean, you know, that's where we are. But
what do you do then in that scenario? Because that's kind of what you've painted for us. You've said it's going to be a shit show in the election. Believe me. Come with us now so that at least you've got a back door, which would be a referendum to get the Western Cape into. That's kind of the thrust of the message that I've heard from you today.
Yeah. Yeah, well, look, we want Cape independence, whatever happens. But I think, I think, how would I describe, when we say we've got 68% people who support a referendum being held, that's the case. That's exactly what the polling says. But what we have at this point in time, and why do people not necessarily go and vote for that? Because it's quite soft support. It's not people's top of their agenda. It's not, yeah, there are really hardcore Cape independence supporters, but there are other people who think it's a nice idea, but maybe it's not their top issue. You know, Jacob Zuma, if those have missed it, when Jacob Zuma wished Julius Malema a happy birthday, he said, we need you to be healthy, we need you to be strong, because collectively we need to get a two-thirds majority. And we know fine well what he plans to do with his two-thirds majority. And you know, clearly that is going to have a fundamental difference on people. And I think, you know, you're going to have this situation where increasingly, but that, you know, this movement's happening anyway, that will accelerate the support for Cape independence, certainly.
Phil Craig, thank you for being with us.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, sir.